Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 30th, 2013. You're listening to the longest running, the best poker cast on the planet. I am Christopher Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
You're back in the saddle again.
It'd be awesome if I actually had a saddle for sitting in.
That would be cool.
I mean, it's a leather chair, so I guess it's close.
That could be our next business, like create chairs out of saddles for cowboys and who've converted to office people, you know?
Yeah, so people could spend about $800 to make that one joke.
Have you ever seen a saddle being made on that, like how it's made? It's really cool.
I'm sure it is, but no, I have not.
Oh, it's really it's a lot of work. No wonder why they're so expensive. I mean, it's a lot of work, but serious artists to make these things. I mean, it's not like a joke. It's pretty cool. Not that I'm trying to steal your thunder from your great road trip here or anything, but I'm just saying. You know, it's pretty cool to enjoy. If you guys ever catch it, you should watch it, because it's some serious artwork involved there. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I got together with some listeners, and we made a saddle, so. There you go.
I can imagine what those look like. So how's it going, man? Good to have you back. I picked you up at the airport yesterday. Pretty uneventful. You know, you were there when I got here. You weren't all beat up.
My luggage.
Yeah,
it's always good.
Always good. But how was the trip?
It was a really good trip. A long trip, as usual. Unfortunately, I got to find a way to shorten these things up somehow if I can. But I got to see a lot of people, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But newsy from up there. Obviously, last week we talked about Maryland Live, which I got a little pre-tour of, and then went ahead and opened up on Wednesday this week, and reports that we got, people were starting to line up at 3 a.m. to get in, and obviously it was very busy, and I think people had a really good time, obviously, but it's going to be really busy for quite a while, which is good for them. You know, I did get a couple emails after last week's show saying, you know what, I think about hitting it, but I think it's going to be probably a madhouse for a couple months.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's probably right. But, you know, madhouse is good. So, but it opened, and I didn't hear everybody had a good time at the opening. Now, the people that are not excited about Maryland Live opening are any casino within a 4-hour drive of Baltimore.
Right.
And I visited all of them on this trip, and you know, almost to a one, they all were, you know, asking me about it and what they thought was going to happen. And obviously, I think last week I talked a little bit about the ones closest to it, you know, the Delaware and the, you know, West Virginia, Charlestown. Those ones are the ones that obviously are going to get a little bit of a bite, at least initially, because while they may not lose their local players, obviously, right until now, there wasn't a place to play in
Baltimore.
Now there's a massive place to play in Baltimore, so if you are in Baltimore, now you're going to have to, there's going to have to be a reason for you to go outside of the area. So, so a lot of people talk about that, and it's interesting to see the discussion on, you know, what rooms are going to do to combat it, which rooms are more worried than others. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be a good thing for poker players in the Mid-Atlantic, I think, initially, because rooms are going to fight for your business.
Yes, so, yes.
Now, if they can find a way for them all to continue to hang on, that's the best-case scenario for all of us, because then you still get plenty of places to go play poker, but you have more options and you're getting better value for your money. But, you know, I think as we talked about last week, if the opposite happens where it just becomes just so big and just sucks all the players out of an area and we lose a couple poker rooms, then that's not the best case scenario.
No.
Right?
Right, absolutely.
But definitely expect some new promotions and new things, player-friendly things, whether it's tournaments or promotions, to come up in almost everywhere up there, including Atlantic City. And I guess that's the other thing I'll talk about before I talk about the fun stuff. But, you know, Atlantic City it's such an interesting thing that there are some people there that really want to change Atlantic City, and there's so many people still there that I don't think really know how to. And I know we talked a little bit about that last week, but I had a bunch of meetings after we did the show last week, and it's just such an interesting city. I mean, it's a place that was just that it had the monopoly on the East Coast for so long.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Foxwood opens, and they're like, oh, okay, now we're worried about that. And then, Delaware got casinos. Okay, they're going to take some. And then Pennsylvania got casinos. And then now everywhere in the world has casinos. So now you're even flying into Atlantic City to play for the most part. There's a casino 2 hours from almost everybody in America.
Yeah.
And, it's a good lesson in and never getting too big in your britches. Is that an old saying I can use?
I understand it.
I mean, you said sit in the saddle, so. But no, it's a good reminder that if things are good today, they may not always be good. And to always be thinking about what happens if they're not, so, you know, you can be prepared for it.
Now, I think, was it last show that you mentioned it, or was it just me and you talking, that you felt like if these people really did make these changes, that AC could really be like the premier spot again?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's my personal opinion, just that I just see it in some of the decisions that are being made in Atlantic City, that they're too close to it. It was so good for so long that to do the radical stuff that I think they need to do to compete in this new marketplace, there's just not there's not enough people there that are willing to go that radical. I mean, there's some of the people that I talk to that I think are, but they answer to bosses that aren't, and that's kind of the problem, I think. But it's on the beach. You know, this is the first time I've ever been up there in the summer, when you're on the boardwalk and there's just people lined up on the beach swimming.
Yeah.
The boardwalk was still busy. I mean, it's got a lot going for it. I mean, it's it's not Vegas. It's not some of these other touristy destinations, but there's lots of casinos. Some of those strip now that really are in the middle of nowhere, and it's just a casino, which is great if that's what you're looking for. But there's so many other amenities in Atlantic City that, you know, if you're looking to go to gamble and you want to do something else, they got that. They just have to make it better, more exciting to people, cheaper or better value, whatever it is, something. But they got stuff to work with there. It's just a matter of working with it.
Oh, that's cool.
It was nice to catch up with some of our listeners. We didn't do official meetup this time because I just didn't know how my schedule was working out, but a couple folks knew I was coming up and contacted me, so we all met up at Jerez and played the nightly tournament, which for some reason we thought was like 125. We get there and it was 48 plus 12.
Yeah.
With an accelerated blind structure, so it was a little bit of a bingo meetup this time. But it's good to see El Snarfo. He drove down from Philly. Our ambassador, Joe Kim, came down from Philly as well, too. And Dan the pilot showed up as well, too,
nice.
With his new girlfriend.
And, did he give you any cool stuff?
No, but I was having fun joking back and forth. And he actually we did a last longer in the tournament, and he lasted longer than me. So I had to give him the $30, and then he sent me a text picture of it, and he asked me what your phone number was so he could send it to you. I did not give him your real number. I gave him a derogatory phone number instead. But no, really fun guys, and I was glad Joe came down too and get to meet him. And I don't know where he went in the tournament. He had a nice stack when I left, so hopefully he did well in it. But it was kind of a change. You know, the last time we did a meet up there, we had a tournament, right? And then we got out and we created a horse game, and there were some Omaha games been going on. This time we got out and there was a 4 limit game and a couple 1-2 limit games, and I think there's an interest list for 2-5.
Hmm.
Now obviously it was the middle of the week, I think Thursday or something, but it's every time I go out there, it's a different Atlantic City again.
Yeah.
Another reminder of it. But.
Hey, was that pink chip game still going?
No.
No.
No. Gone.
Huh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, it's tough because especially for somebody like us that comes like once a year, and you come back and you remember what you did last time, and you just assume it's going to be there.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then it's interesting.
Yeah.
But later in the trip, too, I get to meet up with the pizza guy, Tom Turley.
Yeah.
went to a Nationals game with him and had fun. He introduced me to the Cup game, which I won't explain on the show, but folks that know the Cup game, it's greatly enhanced my enjoyment of baseball. And before that, I stopped off at the Lee Child's house. He got a beautiful new house up in West Virginia. He's about 5 minutes from Hollywood Charlestown, and I got to hang out with him and his wife Jenny for a while. And so, you know, it was a good little roundabout with all our fans, so had a good time.
Did you internally, you know, laugh hysterically because you were making fun of me for the big blind that you suckered me in to watch that stupid movie?
We did, we did. We were repeating our favorite lines, our favorite scenes, and internally, I actually think secretly that you really enjoyed it.
No,
put up this gruff face for the Antiope Nation, because that's your stick. No. And he's like, you know, he's like, oh, and then this other scene, and he's like, well, it sounds like he actually liked it. He's just saying he didn't.
No, I had to get through it because I didn't want to say, oh, I stopped it. Because if I said I stopped it, then you'll be like, well, you got to watch all the way through. You missed the best part. So I made sure I watched the whole thing so I wouldn't get reamed for that. But no, Turley, sorry, pal. It is bad, man. You guys just playing a joke on me. I'm convinced.
It definitely was worth watching all the way to the end to see the golf scene, right?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I just...
Some stop. Academy Award winning acting there. Actually, no, it's terrible. That scene.
I think I'll never bring it up again, I promise.
Well, actually, that's just going to encourage me to bring it up every show. obviously, people couldn't make it down to see us at this time, but I did want to give a reminder out that that a lot of the NAF Nation gets together 3 times a week online.
A month, 3 times a month.
I'm sorry, a month, yeah. Yes. On PokerStars home game client, and for Papes. And again, those games are on the 6th, the 16th, and the 26th of every month. And if you want to get the details on how you can join those, go to our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum and join in. I wish I could play more of those. It's getting really tough with the, you know, I'm on the road all the time.
You know what? Twice in the last, like, couple of months, I tried to play, and the client wouldn't work for me. And I just said...
Oh, no.
Yeah. I just said, you know what? I don't know what's going on. And then it said, on one of them, it said you need to download it again. So I downloaded it again, and it didn't work. So I said... it's just not worth all this trouble to play for no money, no nothing. You know what I mean? I couldn't figure it out, so I got frustrated and gave up. And then I always seem to forget that it doesn't work. You know, I go about a month or so, and then I'm like, oh, I'll try Papes again tonight. And then I'm like, oh, I forgot. It doesn't work. And then so I get frustrated. So I need to really try to figure that out and then try to start playing some of these guys because I have a lot of fun with them. They're good guys. And
yeah,
they really try to win, too, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just as competitive as Apes was.
Yeah.
It's just no money involved or bananas or anything. But I always seem to remember on the 7th, you know, because I'll look down the calendar and I'll be like, oh, I wonder if Apes is coming up. And I'm like, oh, it's the 7th or it's the 17th. I'm like, dang, got it. And then I forget the next time. But I'm going to try. So
I'm going to play on the 36th. Whenever
the 36th, very good.
That one, so.
That's going to be a big one. Everybody's going to show for that one. But remember to go to antiupmagazine.com/forum and search for Papes, and you'll get all the details there. And then I got to visit Fatty's, which a lot of our listeners know about. You know, up in New York City, it's a private social club. And the proprietor has sailed on our cruises before. And... was trying hard to get, like, you know, a reality show built around the characters in the room, and still got it kind of slowly, but he's still trying, so I hope it turns out, because, I mean, he had me in stitches for an hour when I went to visit. It's just outside New York City, and telling me about all the characters, and it is, it's, you know, when you go play poker in a poker room, there's plenty of characters already, right?
Yeah.
And then when you get in a social club, when you're people, you're talking the same 20 to 40 guys every week.
Yeah.
And then people start to take on personalities, right? You already notice them. And they definitely have some at Fatty. So that was kind of cool to go to. I actually haven't been to a private social club before, I think. But it's nice. You know, nice tables, you know, TVs. He's a bow hunter, so a bunch of, you know, trophies on the wall and stuff. It was a really homey thing. It kind of made me want to open a social club here, which obviously we can't do, but... But it'd be nice just to, you know, kind of invite people over to play. You know, it's a little different than a home game. It's like a step up, I think.
And would you say it's sort of a step up from, like, the Chesterfield and all that stuff, you know, or the, obviously, what they...
Yeah, you know, in the Rounders, those clubs seemed a little more sterile than this one, I think. I mean, they seemed like poker rooms, where this seemed like a, you know, it had a kind of, like, brick, added brick paneling is not the right word, but it's not a real brick, but, you know, faux brick on the wall.
Right.
And he's a huge Yankees fan and a memorabilia collector, so all the walls have autographed Yankee stuff, all of it. So, I mean, it was really homey. It had a couch lounge area where, you know, wives, girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands, whoever that want to come can hang out and with it. So it seemed a little homier to me than I think some of the clubs in the Rounders. But the same idea, I guess, probably.
Cool. Very cool.
All right. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we got our good friend Vic G sent in an email to us that I thought was kind of interesting to talk about, because it's using math and poker in a way that I don't think most of us usually do. Maybe it's just me. Well, we'll find out. But let me read it and see what you think about it.
Okay.
All right. He says, here's an odd hand I played last night in a 1-2 spread limit hold'em game at Ebro Greyhound Park. That's up in the Panhandle here in Florida. And the max bet is 100. So I guess that's actually a 1-2-100 spread game.
Yeah, the blinds are 1-2.
1-2. You can only bet the 100 bucks.
Right.
He says they rake 10%, $5 max, pretty standard. $2 going to the jackpot drop, standard here in Florida, not so much elsewhere. When the pot reaches 20 bucks. He says this is an important part of the story. I'm in the big blind, the small blind posts $1, glances whole cards, and then runs off to have a smoke. The other gun player on my left limps, the guy on his left limps, has folded around to me. I look down at 4 clubs, 3 hearts, and check. He's checked around on the flop of ace of hearts, king of spades, jack of diamonds. The turn is the 10 of clubs, and again it's checked around. The river's the queen of spades, putting the Broadway nut straight on the board. Since there's only $7 in the pot, I check, assuming we'll check, and I'll make $1 on the hand from the small blind. The other two players would get $2 each. The other gun player slides out a $100 stack. I say, why would you bet? They're just going to rake the $7 already in the pot. He says nothing. The other gun plus one guy calls. Now, whether I call or fold here makes no difference. If I fold, I lose my $2 blind. If I call, the dealer rakes $7 from the pot, and we each get our $100 river bet back. So I still lose my $2 blind. I fold. So I figure this would be the only time in my poker career where the board is a nuts and I'm folding to a bet. I've never seen this situation before. I haven't either.
No, I've never seen that either. I think a couple of things here. One, Vic shouldn't have said anything after the guy shoved out his $100 because another player was in the hand. So
that's true.
Tisk, tisk. And the other thing is, I think the $100 slide out is a brilliant move.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about that because, to me, when I started this morning, before I came back and read it, I was thinking this is a lot like, to me, kind of like, you know, my $15.99 bet. Mm-hmm. You know, if it works one time, it's worth doing it all the time, right? But then I reread it, and he's right. It doesn't matter. I mean, if everybody else folds, they're going to rake the $7 in the pot.
No, they're not. If they all fold, his $100 isn't the bet. It comes back. They can't put that in the pot, then rake out of his 100. That comes back because it hasn't been matched.
Ah, you are correct.
That's why it's a brilliant move. And if you only get one guy to call, then they'll take their 7. But, you know, the other way, if you know what
that's
I mean?
That's true. Everybody falls. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
So if they call, you get your money back. But if
they
don't...
Well, it depends, though. I mean, some places have some places will rake regardless, you know, if you see a flop. Or at least take the jackpot.
No, they'll take the money, yeah, that's out there, but they can't take the $100 you put out that doesn't get matched. That comes back to you.
That's true.
So I think it's a brilliant move on his part. Plus, you could have read the board wrong. You might not even been paying attention because going check, check, check all around every time. He gets to win that $7 or whatever it is out there, you know, however much it is. You know, he gets something because his 100 comes back. That means they won't rake hardly anything out of that 7 that's out there. And it didn't reach 50, so they won't take the $2 because his $100 comes back. So he's actually, it's a no-lose situation for him, because if somebody calls, then they'll take the 7 that's already in there, and he gets his money back.
Right.
So he's not making any mistake there, really, I don't think. I can't see the error in that.
Well, that's what I initially thought, and you're right. I think the more I think about it, but maybe it's different in some rooms. But you're right. Yeah, I mean, if it's not called, it's not really a bet, right?
Right, yeah. You can't take money out of his stack if you call. Unless they call, so... I mean, even then, obviously, he would have been okay because there was $7 out there. So he was either really brilliant or just being silly or what. But that's the other thing. If the other guys just fold because they don't – like in the case here where Vic folded, if the other guy folded because he wasn't paying attention, you know, and Vic wasn't doing the math or whatever, then he makes like $5 or something for no reason because he knows he can't lose. And if somebody decides to, you know. So, yeah, I think it's a brilliant move on his part. And And Vic was smart to fold because there's no makes no difference for him. You're right.
Yeah, at that point, because he's the third one in. Right, yeah, you're right. Yeah. It made me think of that when I played that 1-5 stud game at 7-0 Hard Rock down here, where it was a dollar bring in, and I got split aces or something, and I bet the max $5, and the 107 year old guy, two to my right, oh, what are you doing that for? And everybody folded, and the house took the dollar bring in.
Yeah,
there wasn't any antes in that game. Took the dollar bring in and dropped it, and they just pushed my $5 back. And I was looking, I'm like, what? Oh, okay, I get it now. I get why you're mad at me. But that's not my fault. That's a weird house policy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. And the other thing, too, is do you want to, you know how they say aces and hold 'em either wins a small pot or loses a big one?
Yeah.
Same thing here. I mean, do you want to just bet really small and let somebody catch up to beat your aces, or do you want to just get your money back and move on? You know?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that drop policy affects really changes the game, doesn't it? Because you're right. I mean, now I'm like, all right, so I got to protect my hand. But if I protect my hand and everybody folds, I get nothing.
Yeah, the only winner's the house.
So what do I do? Do I bet like 2 or 3 and hope I get somebody to call? But then exactly. That's not the proper play. The proper exactly. play with split aces is to bet the max instead, right?
Yeah, it's definitely to get heads up with somebody and let them stand on their own if they can.
So I need a no flop, no drop kind of rule, which I don't know in stud what the variation of that would be. But it would have to be, you know, it has to get to 4th Street, you know, before you else takes anything or something like that, I guess.
So let me ask you, so I don't really remember you talking to me about this hand before. So when that was dealt to you, the split aces, there's no ante at all? There's no money in the middle at all?
Yeah, they don't ante, which is kind of weird. So really all you're playing for is the bring-in.
Wow, okay, so that's really bizarre. So they're bringing, so threw the dollar in, you threw the $5, they took the dollar in.
But they take the dollar regardless, so, yeah. So there's almost no raise, so after that, I'm like, all right, I get it now. And there was never a pre-flop, raise.
Yeah.
The rest of the time I played, because I think everybody had learned. I mean, it was the same, probably the same 6 guys that play that game every day at that point, right? So they've all learned a long time ago, it just doesn't make any sense to raise, and you know, you start playing poker on the next street, I guess, in that kind of game.
They should have little signs posted at every table. It makes no sense to do this in this game. Here, we've caught you up. Well, you know, now you have 7 years of sitting with those curmudgeons experience, and now play appropriately, you know. That stinks, though. I mean, to not have at least an ante or something out there to cover that, so you can play for at least win the bring-in when you raise. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
All right, well, yeah, I thought that was very interesting, though. Smart, it's really weird. He's right, and that's another reason why you don't have the collusion. You have to bet the nuts in cash games, because look at this. You bet the nuts here, you're wasting your time and possibly losing money, so.
Yeah, I guess that's interesting, though. Wouldn't somebody be compelled to bet here?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. How do you not call because the nuts is the nuts? Yeah, it's weird. It's a cash game, though, so I don't think you're compelled
to do
anything.
That's interesting. Now I'm curious. I'm going to ask someone, because here's the thing. I mean, are you compelled to bet if you're the first one to act? I don't think so.
No.
But if you check around and you're the last one, wouldn't it be wouldn't it be on Vic to actually bet if he's the last one and no one else has bet the nuts?
Because
at that point, there's no risk to him.
That's what I mean. I don't know if there's soft.
And then you would make. Then he would be able to make the legitimate case that if somebody calls, then he's not winning anything.
I just don't know if soft play comes into effect in cash games. I think it's tournaments only.
No, that's a good point too.
We'd have to
look
at
that. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
All right.
Well, more fascinating than we thought.
Our listener spotlight is here. Each week we spotlight someone who calls our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something fantastic. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes Store. This comes from Tom Halden, Nottingham, England. He says, I've been playing online for the past 5 years as a recreational player. Lucky you. And over the past 18 months, I've probably upped my playing hours to about 15 a week online. I've built up from $50 to $800 playing a mix of small buy-in games. Good for you. Then I seem to go on positive tilt, think I'm unbeatable, and better than everyone else. I move up in stakes a little bit and lose a couple of $100. I then end up cashing out a few hundred to have something to show for my effort of 3 months of grinding. I have done this twice over the past year. I know I should be happy with making around $1,000 profit, but it's a lot of hours of playing, and I debate whether it's really worth it. Is there a more efficient way of spending my time playing? I very rarely play satellites to big events like the Sunday Million, but recently I have been debating abandoning my routine and playing a lot more satellites and the phase/steps tournaments that sites offer in hope of that first big score. I know this won't be more profitable in the short term, but do you think it could be a better strategy in the long term?
Well, we get this question fairly regularly, I think, and always in a different format.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately, I guess it comes down to why you're playing. He started this letter off a lot about the money, right?
Yep.
And if you're playing, I mean, I'm sure he's enjoying playing too. I'm not going to say that, but I mean, obviously, his baseline for success, as it is for most players, is how much money he makes playing, right?
Right.
And if that's the case, then I don't see a situation here where you feel like you have to move up. If you've tried it a couple times at least, and it doesn't seem to be working. Now, eventually, you're going to get to the point where you can move up. But at this point, if you're consistently winning at this one level, the small buy-in games, right? I mean, he's built up from 50 to 800.
Yeah.
That's the best long-term strategy, I think, for him, is just to keep playing when you crush until, I guess, you get so bored that it's no fun anymore. And then at that point, you challenge yourself. But the problem with the tournaments, I think, this is from my own experience playing online. Again, I'm a tournament guy. I like to play tournaments. It's more fun for me than playing cash games.
Mm-hmm.
But the tournaments just suck your bankroll.
Yeah.
You know, even the steps and things. I mean, I remember back when I was doing the steps where, you know, I'd do one, I'd get in, I'd move up to the next one, and then I'd lose, and I'd go back to the beginning and start. And the next thing I know, if you add up all the steps I played, I could have just bought into the thing that I was trying to get in. Obviously, I got a lot more play by doing it the way I did. But, you know, that's where my bankroll online always went, was just trying these tournaments. Now, that being said, if you get in the Sunday Million and win it once, then you're, you know, you're a small buy-in game, which he's this kind of player, then he's going to be set, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever you take out of the site, obviously. But, I don't know. I think, you know, it's boring to say it, but, you know, if you're good at something, just keep doing it. And if you get bored with it, I guess, is the time to try to do something else. But
okay, I have a couple of things here. One, I'm going to focus on the word that he puts in the middle of this little email, efficient. He says, is there a more efficient way of spending my time playing? No. You cannot be more efficient than playing cash games.
That's true.
There is no way that playing in tournaments and cashing one out of every 10 and doing steps and phases to even get to that tournament is going to be more efficient than playing in small buy-in cash games and making $800 every couple of months. There's just no way. Now, the other thing is, you know, you're making money doing something you really enjoy. I mean, if you're making money consistently, and it's not your job because you're doing it 15 hours a week, so it's not a job. It's clearly recreational for you. Yes, you may want to be getting better at this game, but you said in the beginning you're a recreational player, and you're banking. You know what I mean? You've got cheddar. There's no reason to do anything different than just keep enjoying the game you're playing and make more money. As far as, you know, being efficient, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying that you shouldn't aspire. I'm not saying you shouldn't try something else. If you, like Scott said, if you are bored with it, then yeah, try the tournaments or whatever. But it won't be more efficient. That's for sure. Yeah. And then the long-term strategy, again, think about how many people who tried to make it as a touring poker pro and where they are today. You know, they're dealing somewhere telling everybody that they used to be a touring pro. And that's just the way it is, because it's not an easy life. And it's even harder because they have the travel rake and everything. But yeah, okay, you could do it online, but it's still not going to be easy. And if you're playing small buy-ins, and we don't really know what small buy-ins, but I can imagine if you're only making $800 playing 15 hours a week over a 3 or 4 month period, you're probably playing really small. And if you're playing really small and you move up just a little in stakes and you're losing a couple of $100, then you're probably not going to take down the Sunday Million. I mean, it's just a fact.
Well, everybody gets lucky at once. But yeah, you're right.
You can get lucky, but really, that's not efficient, and it's certainly not the most profitable, and it's definitely not the best strategy long-term to hope that you get lucky to win the Sunday Million. So I just think if you're trying to be efficient and you're trying to make some money, stick with it. And then if you get bored with it, you know, try to move up again or maybe try something else and move up in that, play a different game. I don't know. But I just keep focusing on profitable, efficient, and strategy for long term. And I don't see trying to, you know, phase your way into Sunday Million and then winning that and being the most efficient time spent way to spend your time. So
yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing too that I looking back at the letter now, he says, you know, but it's a lot of hours playing a debate whether it's really worth it. I think that's a question that's not poker related. It's life related.
Yeah, lifestyle.
So I mean, if you've decided, hey, I mean, obviously, I mean, we can't argue with the fact that he's making money at it. What he's saying is, you know, hey, if I can make $2 an hour in something, is it worth my time to be spending that time doing it, right?
Right.
And that's where I think really the problem with Tom is right here. He's obviously tried to move up in stakes, and it hasn't been as profitable as what it is. And so I think really the answer to him is it worth sticking this out for a while until he gets to the level where he can move up comfortably and make it worth his time? Or is there just something better to do with his life at this point and not play so much? I mean, obviously, not quit, but, you know, instead of 15 hours a week online, if it's not worth 15 hours a week online, you cut back down to 5 and you make, you know, $300 yeah. over the year rather than 1,000,
yeah.
you know, and then you've got 10 hours a week to, you know, do whatever else it is that makes you happier.
So. I think that's one of the things that, and maybe we should recommend this to him, I don't know, but that's what I love about the home game. Is over the long run, I think maybe I've made like $1 an hour in our yeah. home. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that we all pretty much consistently will win at some point. But to me, it's just about getting together with the guys, and that's why I'm spending my time where it's entertaining to me, having fun with my friends. And oh, by the way, I'm making a buck or two an hour while I'm doing it, you know, in the long run. And so to him, maybe it's not personal for him. He's online, he's playing with a bunch of strangers, and all he's doing is trying to beat that game and win money, and maybe that's not yeah. enough for him anymore, because he says, I know I should be happy with that money, but it's a lot of hours, so is it worth it? So, okay, well then, how about doing the same thing, but doing it with your friends, or finding a home game, or doing it, because I don't know how far away Nottingham, England would be from the games that are there, but I think they could probably find a poker game somewhere that's not online, but maybe not, maybe that's why he's playing online, I don't know.
I would think. Well, he's probably playing online because he can.
Yeah, that's true too. But I don't know, to me, I think I've brought that up before about, you know, is it worth it to play for $1 an hour, you know, which it's I'm using that's probably not the right number, but
yeah, no, I mean it's the point you're making.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it's, you're not getting rich playing in the home game.
Yeah, you're just having a good time with your friends and
something else beyond just the poker playing. Whereas for Tom, it looks like it's simply the poker playing. And that's
yeah,
why it seems like a grind. It's not a grind playing in the home game.
No, exactly. And when we used to work at the Times, and I would go into work and like on a Monday. You know, one of my buddies there would turn to me and say, how'd you do this weekend? And I said, oh, man, I had to, you know, I won like $300 online. He's like, man, I'd love to have a hobby that paid me.
Yeah.
You know, so look at it as a hobby. You're getting paid for your hobby. That's the way I look at it when I play.
Yeah.
And win. You know, when I lose, then I'm like, what am I doing this for? But
all right. It's time for the call of the floor. If you find yourself in a situation in your favorite poker room or home game, not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, and we'll have our veteran poker room manager, Jody Russell, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti-Up logo version, and always use code Anti-Up for free shipping. This week's email comes from Brenda M., and she says, we're playing in a 1-to-100 hold'em game in a Colorado casino. Kind of our theme today, I guess, right?
Yeah.
On the flop, I bet $5, get two callers, and then a player throws in a $25 chip and then says, make it 25. I object. Chip was thrown in before action declared. I'm directly next to the player and heard nothing audible. Other players heard nothing. Dealer says, well, I saw his lips move. I knew what he wanted to do. Floor is called. Dealer explains the situation accurately, even saying that she saw his lips move and knew what he wanted to do. Floor says, it's hard to hear in this room sometimes, and lets the raise stand. Is this really the correct call here? This guy's a regular. The dealer knew him, so maybe that affected the decision?
Okay, Jody says, this one could have gone either way. When making a decision, the floor person has to consider all the information given and do what they think is best. We are constantly challenged with gray areas coupled with partial information. Good dealers who are paying attention often get signals and motions from players that others at the table miss. This person may have looked directly at the dealer and mouthed raise. That does happen sometimes. It's hard to say whether this was a good call, but it seems like the floor person did what they thought was best. As long as no one acted behind the player wanting to make it $25, there's no harm done here. Yeah, that's sort of a judgment call. I mean, the other thing too is when I would, if I was a floor person, I would look at the guy's stack, and if he had $5 chips in front of him,
right, yeah.
I would say clearly if he had wanted to call $5, he'd throw a red out instead of a green. You know, so there's a lot of things weighing on this situation to me. So I think it's legitimate to let him do that. And also, as the $5 person who bet, you know, Brenda, you're almost giving away your hand, too, by saying, I don't really have that good of a hand. I don't want you to make it 25 to go, you know?
Yeah, not that's that a tough situation because you want to enforce the rules, but you're right. It kind of gives away your hand.
But I think that's the right ruling. I mean, they took all the information in, the dealer, even though she's sort of saying the dealer knew him, so that was sort of like they were ganging up or whatever, or that they were just buds or... You know, but I don't think that really affected it. The floor person has to come over and, you know, and you said the dealer explained it accurately. So if the dealer explained it accurately, how could that really affect the decision? So the floor made the right call, I think.
Yeah, I think to the extent that this guy's a regular, I think what we have to remind ourselves of is if that there are rooms that are locals' rooms, that, you know, it's the same guys there every week. Now, it doesn't make it right that there's a different set of rules in that situation, but I think it's human nature, you know, that people get to know each other and they know, so then maybe this guy does mouth his raises all the time, who knows. Again, it doesn't make it right, but you have to understand that if you travel as much as I do, every room you go in, there are some things like that. It's a road game for you. The ball bounces the wrong way when you're on the road, and that's just it's just the thing you had to factor in here. So now, had this been a gross problem, then I would be more upset. But I think Jody's right. You know, no one had acted, no harm done here. Now we know that this guy is a low talker, and you just, you know, you move on from there. And if you're uncomfortable with it, which you're perfectly justified in being uncomfortable with it, you go to the room across the street, you know, and start playing there and see whether it's a little different for you. But it is also, I mean, this is one thing. It's tough. Some of these rooms are loud and stuff, and this is why I would never want to be a floor. It's a no-win situation here.
Yeah, no, a floor is tough, and they don't even make as much money as dealers.
Sometimes, absolutely.
It's terrible. So, but I think you made the right call here, and I think Jody did too. So, hey, it's time for a brand new O'Malley's Move. Here we go.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're playing 1-2 No Limit Hold'em in a card room we've never been in before with people we've never seen before. We bought in for $200 and are on the button. We post a big blind because we want to get in on the action. Under the gun calls, and it's folded to the cutoff, who min raises to 4. We look down at the 6 of spades, 4 of spades. Sure, I know, this is one of those dangerous situations, but we just can't help ourselves with the suited gappers. We call. The small blind, big blind, and under the gun all call as well. And with $10 in the pot, the flop comes down the ace of spades, 3 of spades, 3 of hearts. It gets checked to the cutoff, who overbets. He makes it $12 to go. Yikes. What does this bet mean? Remember, we have virtually no information on these players, but we're under the impression the rest of the table is going to fold, so we make the call. The turn is the 7 of spades, and the cutoff makes the same $12 bet. What is he doing? We decide to raise. We kind of want to let him know we already have the flush, in case he has the king of spades or a 3. So, this is one of those cases where our hand isn't disguised well at all, and we really don't care. There's $40 in the pot, including his bet, which we triple to 36. After thinking for quite a while, he calls. The pot stands at about $100, and the turn is the five of diamonds. The cutoff fires a third bullet, but this one, a measly $25. Only a quarter of the pot. We put just over 25% of our stack in on the first hand. Is this a value bet? Are we raising? What's the play here?
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And it's an O'Malley love fest today, Chris.
It is?
Getting a little low on the hands of the week. Hint, hint. So we're going to our old standbys that have sent us some hands to get us through these lean times.
We got to start calling the show like Annie Up with Malcolm O'Malley or featuring old Malcolm O'Malley. He really comes through for us.
And I think you're going to like this one or you're just going to hate this one.
Am I going to have to write this one down or can I do it with my head?
Oh, we'll see. This might be a writer.
All right, I'll write it down.
He says they're at a home game that he's not a regular at, but it's a home game. So he says they play dealer there, and then they have a list of 12 games to choose from. Pretty cool.
Cool.
He says, at this point, we're playing 50 cent, $1, no limit hold'em 8. That's right, no limit hold'em high, low, 8 or better split.
We have never called that, right? We've always joked about it, but we've never actually called
it. We've never called it. So, I mean, the voice has been a while since I've read this hand, so we'll see whether it's something I might want to call the next home game after it. He says it's six-handed, and he's got about $100, and he's in the big blind.
Okay.
Under the gun folds, plus one folds, middle position player calls, and it's folded around to him with king of hearts, four of hearts. And he's going to describe this this villain before he answers. He says, his middle position player is tight aggressive, probably too much on the tight side, and he only raises big hands pre-flop, even at a six-handed table. I don't know much about this guy, but this is how I've categorized 3 hours I've played with him. So this could be flawed, but the game poker is a game of incomplete information. You just got to fill in the blanks. We also have him covered.
Okay, the first question is, did you say, and I'm sorry if you did you say where we were in this hand, like what position?
We are the big blind.
Oh, that's right, you did. Okay, you said $100 in big blind. Okay. All right, so I'm just going to check, right? I mean, I don't see any
heads
point.
Up against this guy.
Yeah, right. So what's the point of raising, right, because he just called. So I'm going to check and see a flop, because we don't have a real good low draw with this. I'm assuming, yeah, and then we don't have any kind of nut draw with this unless the ace of hearts comes out, so... And this guy, clearly, if he came into the hand, and you said he just calls, right?
So he just called, too. He just limped, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm just ready to see a flop and hope I hit it really hard, you know, because we're dominated by a lot of hands that might just call, like king-queen or king-jack or, you know, I don't know. If he's really tight, then if he's coming into the hand, I can't even imagine what his hand is if he's limping, if he's tight. If he's really tight, what would he limp with? Usually if they're tight, that means they only come in with big hands and they usually raise with them, so I can't even put this guy on a hand, so I'm not going to do anything except hope to see a flop for free and hit it really hard.
Excellent. Alright, well that's exactly what our hero said. And the flop comes king of clubs, five of hearts, deuce of hearts, so we have a top pair, the second nut flush draw, and a backdoor low draw, because again this is high low, so you only need one card to complete your hand.
Yeah.
So, and it's on us with 250 in the pot.
Well, I think I'll bet. I mean, we got this. This is a huge flop for us.
Flop for us, yeah. I mean, it's heads not, up against a guy that didn't raise.
Yeah, and it's not like... but he might have an ace in his hand to get half the pot, which would suck. You know, if it got the low got there.
If it got there, yeah.
And then if an ace comes on the board, then your high is gone if it's not a heart. So, I mean, you're looking at probably splitting this pot anyway. Yeah. But if he has something like sevens, you know, limped hoping to hit a set, or threes... You know, then your bet is going to make them fold. So I'm going to bet. I mean, I'm just, I guess, and what were the, was it 1-2?
We're playing 50 cent, $1.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd bet $2, I guess.
That sounds like exactly what I would bet. And guess what? It's exactly what O'Malley bet.
Okay.
And our opponent calls. So now there's 650 in the pot, and the turn is the six of spades. So our board now is king of clubs, five of hearts, deuce of hearts, six of spades.
Now we've picked up even more outs to a low, which again, this guy has an ace. You know, we're not going to get it, but and a straight. I'm going to keep betting. I'll bet like $3. $4.
All right, and our hero says, aggressive poker is winning poker, and if he doesn't have the net low, this might be a hard call from the make, so I bet pot. $6.50.
Well, now I'm starting to remember that this guy has, like, ace tray. He can just shove on us, and we have to put us to a decision. So this is very difficult. It's no limit high-low. I forgot about that. So maybe I just check, you know, because I don't even think a defensive bet is going to work here. If this guy could easily limp with ace-tray suited, like ace-tray clubs, you know, and then he's like, now I've got the nut low, and you're putting money in the pot, and I can just shove on you, and you have to be put to a decision. So maybe I check. I don't know. I know I wouldn't bet pot.
Well, it's an interesting hand with the low in here now, because you're right. If you have an ace, well, obviously you have ace tray, then it's perfect, right? But
yeah.
But even an ace, you could probably get away with really putting pressure on someone,
yeah,
knowing you've got half of it possibly locked up, right?
Yeah, it's some serious pressure. It's a semi-bluff, is what it is,
right.
and you've got an ace too, which even could be good if you hit it on the river too. So that's even more out. So. Yeah, I don't know if I want to open up the betting here. I think that I'd be happy to just surrender, you know, the control of the hand, let him bet something, and then... See, this is the kind of game you should probably put pot limit, even though I hate pot limit.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I think you're right, yep.
But I take back my $4 bet. I forgot what game we were playing. I think I probably would check call any reasonable bet.
It's kind of an interesting situation where that check call actually kind of works. You know, it's like you just check pre-flop, then you put out like a little feeler bet on the flop to see whether your opponent had anything, and he called you. So okay, yeah, something. So now I'm just, so it almost induces a bet,
yeah,
which I think we want. We want some money in the pot. What we won't want is, I think, is what you said, is being put to a test right now.
Right.
I think that I like that a lot. Check, and hopefully he bets to us, and if not, then we'll come out firing again on the river, probably.
Yeah, because let's say we check to him, and now he bets. He's not going to bet more than pot, probably.
Wouldn't think, right? Yeah.
So if he bets pot, now that's what he was thinking about betting anyway, so now you gladly call and hope the ace of hearts falls, you know, because the low got there.
Mm-hmm.
But if the ace of hearts comes, now you've got the second nut low, and you got the nut flush, so... Or, you know, even an ace would be okay, I think, here, unless he has the three in his hand, then, you know, whatever. But then you probably have the high. So I would rather just check call, because there's no way he's going to bet, like, 20. But if you bet pot first, now he's going to say, I'm going to bet at least $20 now, because I'm going to bet three times your bet.
Exactly.
And we had him covered. We don't know how much he really had to start the hand. If he had, like, $60, he might just shove on you. Now you've got nothing except kings with a terrible kicker. You know, this guy could have ace king, which he wouldn't have because he didn't raise pre-flop. But I don't know how he plays either. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think the best call, really best play here, is check call.
Yeah, he did start the hand with 85. That
85.
Helps.
Okay. But, all right.
Okay. So we decided to bet pot, and he instantly makes it 20 to go.
Yeah. See,
not as bad as you thought, but yes, this is not. Now we're committing 26 here.
Yeah, because that's what I was saying. If you bet 650, he'll bet three times that, which is about 18 or 19, which is what he did. He bet 20. That's exactly what basically three times that is. So, yeah, now we're put to a test with just kings and no kicker. And this guy could already have a straight. This guy could already have a set. He could already have the nut low and he's free rolling you because there's no card that can come on the end that gives you the nut low.
Right.
And he could already have the nut low. And even and that's the beauty of this game is if you have the nut low on the turn, you can't lose the nut low.
Right, yeah.
Right? Because no matter what, either one of your cards comes out, you still got the nut low. So this guy is probably free-rolling on you. He could be free-rolling on you,
mm-hmm,
and you didn't have to be put to that test. So I guess I call and hope I get there. And then if I check and he just shoves on me, then I have to really think about, does this guy have the low and I have the high?
Right.
And now you're doing it for half the pot.
Yep, yep.
Terrible, terrible game. Now I know why we don't call it.
I'm definitely going to call him now just to tick you off. All right, so Mally says, I narrow his range and take some things into account. And he says, this could be 4-3. Even though this player's tight, he seems to have a good handle on this game. And in no limit hold'em 8, this hand would play well with a straight and low possibilities. It could be a flop set, something like 5s or deuces. Not sure what kind of king this could be. He didn't raise pre-flop or on the flop. Now I'm starting to wonder if this could be a nut low. Ace 3, perhaps, or maybe even ace 4.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're talking about. Yep.
Yeah. And I don't put him on 4-3. A tight player doesn't limp in middle position with 4-3 to me. Now, if his characterization of this player is correct, then there's no way he has 4-3. If it's not completely correct, it's a little flawed, then it's possible. But I can't put him on that hand. I really can't.
All right, so O'Malley does make the $20 call.
Okay.
He says, I thought about raising, but I'm just going to get snapped off by a better hand, and I think he's shoving ace-3 and ace-4 there by raise.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I also think my hand is too strong to fold at this point, but I could be wrong about that. I don't think it's too strong to fold, but... I mean, obviously, if the bet was bigger, then I definitely would be thinking about folding.
Yeah,
I'm not happy about the 20-hour call.
I could get away from it. Here's it, but... The other thing is, if an ace does drop and this guy's got ace four, now you've won three quarters of the pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's the ace of hearts, I mean.
Ace of hearts, right. Yeah.
So I think that your call is okay there. I don't know if I would raise. I definitely wouldn't raise. This guy's, because that nut low is there and it's no limit hold'em, you're really asking for trouble. So, I guess I would probably call 14 to win 27 or whatever. So. No, even more, because we bet, so 14 to win 6 to 13, so 33. So, yeah, I would probably do that. 2-1 on my money with a nut flush, with a flush draw and a straight draw and a possible low, I guess I would call. But I could get away from it, too, if I was had a gun to my head, so.
That would be a really tough game.
Yeah, that'd be a Doyle Brunson game, I think.
All right, so there's 46-50 in the pot, and O'Malley says, I hate the river. Ace of diamonds. So our final board is king of clubs, five of hearts, deuce of hearts, six of spades, ace of diamonds.
Well,
he says, sure, it completes my low, 6-5, 4, deuce, ace, but it was the wrong shade of red.
Yeah. Here's the deal. If the guy has ace tray, you're getting scooped. But if he has ace four, you're getting one quarter of this pot. Jeez, that's a terrible river. Well, I'm clearly checking. I mean, there's no other play. What do? You can't shove on a guy who, you know, is not going to fold. Because even if he just had an ace and didn't hit, you know, he's still going to think that his aces now are good. And I don't think you're going to get him off his hand unless you really, really shoved. And this guy really, really wasn't good enough to play this game. And I don't think that's the case here. I think you got to check.
Yeah. Malice says, I also hit it because I'm pretty sure my high is no good now. I think you're probably right on that. And my low is shaky at best. I exercise some pot control here. And Chuck, he counts out a nice, tidy $25 and puts it in the pot. I think he even moused it. He threw it in there. I'm joking. That's me.
That's funny. But this guy clearly wants to get paid off. And I don't think that he's savvy enough to have played this hand on the bluff this way. So he wants to get paid off. It's just whether or not your low is now good, because I don't think your high is. I mean, he could have eight. Yeah. There's no way he has 3-4. And if he does, he's still beat, because you beat for the low and the high. So,
well, any ace, I could see him playing this as it was, because he thought he had the low on the turn, right?
Yeah.
He would have had a low with any ace, and then obviously some redraws towards the high.
Well, any ace that had another low card on, right? Oh, on the turn, yeah.
Yeah, the turn, yeah.
No, because the turn only gives him four low cards if he only has one ace in his hand. If he doesn't have a low card.
Well, okay, like let's say like an ace seven or something.
Yeah. But even ace seven. Yeah, ace seven is the only way we get half the pot, right? Because we have the low.
Right.
Or ace seven. Ah, man, $20 to win 66. 3-1 of my money with just kings and a not great low. Jeez, this is a tough decision. I think I'm going to lay this down. Because then even if you win, you're not really winning 66, you're winning half the pot. You have to remember that.
Yeah, so Mally says it's 25 to win 48.
Yeah. I think I'm laying it down. I think the turn was terrible, and the river was terrible, and we have to live with that fact. You have to fold sometimes you have to fold the best hand, too, but I don't think we have it.
And had we not bet out on the turn, we would only have been invested for 650 plus the other calls, right?
Yep, and then he would have bet less on the river, so it would have been more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the mistake that was made there. Which I made. I mean, I was guilty of making that mistake too until I really thought about what game we were playing. Then I changed my mind, which I might have done in the game. But I think you're right. I think the 650 bet, the pot bet on the turn, is a mistake. And that's what led us to this point. So I have to fold.
He says, I thought this was a snap call at first, but then I thought I'm only going to win half this pot at best and might be getting scooped here, perhaps even quartered if he has ace-4. So best case scenario, I'm putting in 25 to win 48-25. That's not a good proposition in my mind, and that's not even a guarantee. I put about 25% of my stack in already, but I can reload up to the $100 max at the end of the hand if I want to. So I say to the guy, I'm leaning toward folding, but if I show, will you? He stays quiet and just shakes his head. Curiosity gets the better of me, so then I say, I'll give you a buck if you show. He says, make it a nickel.
$5.
I counter with, meet in the middle, 250. I love this negotiation going on.
Yeah, yeah.
He nods, I muck my hand and toss him 2 white chips and a black chip, which is a 50-cent chip.
Right.
It's a pretty laid-back game, and this kind of stuff happens a lot. He flips over the ace of hearts, tray of hearts.
Sweet.
And Mally, of course, we could have lost our entire stack on this
one. Wow, we are so lucky. And that's exactly the hand we put him on, was ace tray suited. Wow. Wow, he was so lucky that heart didn't drop. Man, he is so lucky. So that cost him $2.50 instead of a sell stack at the end.
Yep.
Yeah, that hand makes a lot of sense. Wow. Sorry, O'Malley.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure had we played it the way I would have played it. I'm sure I probably would have lost just as much. Because I probably would have, I'm trying to think how, we did lead out on the flop, right? And he just called.
Yeah, we let out, and then we let out again.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have let out. That's right. So it wouldn't have been on. Yeah, so we would have lost a little less, but we might have made that call in the end, too.
That's true. So the 250 is probably the best way to go. But see, now he didn't set it up that way. He didn't say, we're in a home game. We're at the end of the hand. If we don't want to pay the last bet,
we can buy the card.
We can buy the card. You know, he didn't say that. So next time we'll take that into consideration when O'Malley sends a hand in. But interesting hand. And it made a lot of sense. That's what he had. I couldn't put him on the 4-3 and... or even ace-7 or something like that. Really, ace-3 or ace-4 was really the only cards that made sense the way he played it and the way he characterized that player. So, cool.
Yeah.
Nice hand.
I definitely don't think No Limit Hold'em 8's ever going to take off, but this is kind of why I like to at least play it once in a while or at least analyze it on the show, because you get more information. If this is a straight No Limit Hold'em game,
it
would have been a different thing. But now you've got, it's more interesting to me.
Yeah, the low part of it really gives it texture and gives you more things to think about.
Exactly.
And when what he could be thinking too. So great hand. Okay, well, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.